Testing. November 3rd, 1978. Talking to Roger Dayton and Kaya Cook.
You got it.
Got it.
Oh.
You might, if you ever feel like something comes up that you want to add, you know, you can go right ahead.
Oh.
You know. Mm-hmm. But we're thinking about things like, let's see, does it start with, well, let's start with maybe, you know, people around in this area,
we
hear that the people didn't always get along real well all together. Sometimes there were some bands like Kayakook Band and a Nulato Band,
mm-hmm.
and people like that, mm-hmm. and they used to fight. They used to have wars.
Wars.
Did anybody ever tell you about those wars or what they were like?
Well, my old man used to talk about this massacre that took place down at Nulato. But then nobody ever liked to talk about it. Because right now, the people at Nulato, they still feel bitter about that. So, or maybe it's better not to talk about that, because if they hear my tape or read the book, then they just won't like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They'll remember it anymore.
Oh yeah. So I'd rather not talk about it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That was a long time ago, though.
Oh yeah. If you shut off the tape, I might hear a little about it.
Okay. Sure.
Well,
you might learn some. And it's good to know that it means something to get along.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just really easy. People don't get along really easy, mm-hmm. you know. But
this massacre, revenge massacre, happened around in the month of February 1851. Mm-hmm. So it must be around 1848 that this people from down there attacked this village up there. Mm-hmm. Did anybody tell you about that?
Yeah, I've read about it too.
Yeah.
And people didn't know the details.
Yeah.
They just knew that it had happened right around they'd say 1848 or 1851.
Yeah.
And that there were a couple Russian traders there.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a lot of people killed. But nobody knew details of why or where they came from or anything. Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of people, because they wiped out the entire village. That was a revenge. Well, the reason why they bided their time, these people appeared that people down there thought that people up here were going to forget about it. You know, they wanted a surprise attack.
Ah,
and that's just what they done. Mm-hmm.
Boy, that'd be a hard thing to forget about.
Huh? Oh, yes, you can't forget about things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what my old man, this is just the way my old man used to tell it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah.
So, when was it that you saw this bunker?
Bunkers? Well, it was in the fall of 1935, in the month of August. Mm-hmm. Of course, my old man knew where it was. So, we were going up, a fellow by the name of Wilfred Evans was taking us up. Of course, we had no boat of our own at that time. And then this Wilfred Evans wanted to see this bunker my old man was mentioned. So we stopped there and went up the bank and maybe about a couple hundred yards back in the woods. And we came to the place and they had this underground bunker. It was made of logs. I don't know what tools they used. And my old man explained to us that this is where they have protection against enemies, you know. They used to fight quite a bit among themselves. So I guess they were pretty well protected in this way.
Is that people that lived there at Nikolai City?
No, just all over, all the way up the Kike River.
Didn't use this for?
Oh, well, I suppose there was a lot of places like that. But this is the only place that my old man knew of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I'd say it was just about a couple of miles above the mouth of the Katil River, up on the Kaibab River.
Mm-hmm.
On the right hand side going up.
So what did it look like?
Well, it wasn't too big, maybe about I'd say about 12 feet square, and then they had a tunnel going to the next place, and then another same size, 12 feet square. And I suppose they had that covered over with logs too, so high off the ground so they could shoot at the enemy.
Were there like windows in there?
No, there was no windows, just little holes there. Yeah, they were just big enough to shoot arrows through there. And, they used to fight, that indicated that they used to fight quite a bit among themselves, you know.
Did you go inside those windows?
No. It, part of it was caved in, you know. I see all the logs were pretty well rotten. And maybe it was about this high. I suppose it was much deeper than that. But it was about 3 feet high. But it was much deeper than that, because as the years came along, it kept filling up with mud. Well, that's the way they had pretty well protection. And they used to kill one another too, you know, from people from the coast and people from the interior. They used to have a lot of wars between them, but not too much, you know. And some people, they used to, when the first tobacco used to start coming out, and whatever, matches, this square match, as you know, you've seen them. Yeah, mm-hmm. Or can of tobacco and some tools, maybe an axe. They just used to, in the spring, you know, on the crust, when people start getting ready for beaver hunting, you know, they just used to use bow and arrows for beaver hunting there. They'd climb on the side of a hill, whoever wants to go and rob somebody else, and then they see campfire off in the distance, and he knew there was somebody there, so he'd start towards that place, and he'd hide not far from there, and when he thinks that fellow goes to bed, he sneaks up on him and either shoot him an arrow or club him. Sometimes this fellow, he wants to rob, didn't happen anything at all. Sometimes they just used to do that just for a can of tobacco, kill one another. No. Well, I wouldn't call that a war, you know, just taking place between two men. And in that way, they used to kill one another quite a bit, just for little stuff.
Could they be people from the same village?
Same village?
People from different villages?
Well, not from the same villages. People from one village, they hardly fought among themselves, but people from village to between villages, they used to fight quite a bit among themselves. Like the people from the coast, the Eskimos, wherever they meet, I suppose they don't get along with the people. I guess they used to have wars, but in them years, they used nothing but spears and arrows. And like I say, I suppose they obtained this tobacco, maybe an old-fashioned axe. They obtained it from the Russians. And I guess they learned how to smoke. And then sometimes if an enemy thinks the other guy has got a can of tobacco, he just kills him for it. Yeah. Whatever he obtains from the Russians.
Do you remember any incidents of Eskimos coming over?
No, it was a long time before our time. Yeah.
Would people ever tell you stories?
No, not too much. This is what my grandfather, my father used to tell us. You know. Yeah. I guess that stories came down through the generations. And one incident there, people from the Kayak River, you know, they went towards the Hoosley area, that's closer to towards the coast. One night they were camping, there was about 3-4 of them. This is what my father used to tell us. And late at night, when it gets dark, you know, they still have campfire going. And all of a sudden, there's somebody threw something at them from out of the camp, maybe a big stick or whatever. And they found right away that guy, what that guy was up to. They whispered among themselves what to do, you know. They'd pretend that they go to sleep, go to bed, and let that fellow sneak into camp. Well, they all went to bed, pretended that they went to bed. And then this fellow, he sneaked close to the camp. And then they all jumped up and made for him. They grabbed hold of him. They asked him where he was from. He said he was from the coast. He was an Eskimo. And then they made him their prisoners. You know, they guarded them all night till they get daylight. They asked him why they attacked the camp. They attacked them. He said he had nothing to eat. And he couldn't help but doing that. He said he was only trying to drive the men away from the camp. So he could get a hold of the grub, you know, whatever there was. So they could have killed him there. It was just easy. He was only one. But then he just happened that he was just a loner. And I guess these people sort of felt sorry for him. They told him that we'll give you grub, enough grub to go home. And you better go home, Jerry, just the way you came. So this fellow promised that he was going to do that. There was one old fellow among these other people. He said, wait a minute, I want to remember that fellow there. Cut off one side of his ear so we'll know who he is. So they did just that before they let him go. They cut off one side of his ear. Just to remember who he was, you know. This old man, it happened to be old man with this bunch there. I guess he wanted to do that just so they'd know him in later years. When he got up back home, well, people noticed that his one side of ear was missing. They asked him what happened to his ear. And he told them all about what happened, you know. And they told him that lucky that these people didn't kill you. Oh, yeah. That's one incident my old man used to tell us about.
Yeah. What did that make you feel like when you made that trip over to Eskimo country?
Well, that was years later. I guess people over there are pretty friendly. But then the people from the interior, I guess they'd rather stick to themselves, you know. But even now, the people over there are pretty friendly. We took that trip in 1925. I was just 4 years old. Like I told you that these people from the coast, they invited us to go over there for Christmas. My father didn't even mention any bitter feelings between him and them. So it must, these wars must have occurred years before that. So I guess they still remember, but then, like I say, these people over there are pretty friendly. Even now, they're pretty friendly. So there's no bitter feelings between these people from the Yukon and Eskimos over there. My grandfather used to know these older people, same age as him. And they got to be pretty good friends, you know. In that way, they were all friendly towards us. Yeah.
How did your grandfather get to know them?
Well, he used to hunt over there, close to where these people from the coast used to hunt and trap. Mm-hmm. And that's how he got to know them.
So where was this at? He was
I'd say on the Huxley Flats. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did he ever trade with them?
Oh, yes, I suppose so. Maybe mittens or boots or whatever.
So did he understand some Eskimo?
Oh, yes, he understood some, you know. Not too much, but then part of their language. You know. Oh, yeah. This uncle that he just went out, he tell you about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He told me that they were on the Huxley Flats camping, and he was maybe he was about 12 or 13 years old, camping out there with his father. And you know, in them days they used to chop out beer, you know, which got no water. That water in the fall time drains away from the lake. And they're easy to get them, you know. And then one morning they went out. They were going to work somewhere on this beaver house. And this uncle of mine, he said, he happened to look down the lake. And he said, there was two guys coming towards him. And the way they greet each other is they holler at you first. Hello. It's just to see if you'd answer in a friendly way. If you answer in a friendly way, they did come right to you. And, this grandfather, my grandfather recognized them right away, these two guys. Oh, they were happy to see each other. And then my grandfather, he invited them to their camp, make pot of soup, bear soup, and fed them everything, dry fish. They talked all night, and the way he tells it, he said, they stayed up all night, they didn't sleep at all. They'd sing for each other, you know, they'd sing in their language, and my grandfather would sing for them, you know. And that way they sort of got together again. I mean, just... that never seen each one another for quite a few years. And then the way he tells it, he said, my grandfather and these two other guys never slept all night until noontime. And then finally these two guys from the coast, they had to go, they had to leave. Well, my grandfather gave them some meat and a little grub, a little dry fish, and they left. And in that way, my grandfather knew some of those people over there. They were glad to see each other, whatever they met. Yeah, that was just the way he told it.
Yeah. What is your grandfather's name?
Tom Dayton. Mm-hmm.
And is that his father, Albert's father?
No, yes, that's my uncle. That's his youngest son.
Oh.
Yeah. He's just about 10 years older than I am. I'm 57. He must be about 67. Mm-hmm.
What was it that your grandfather did with these two Eskimo people before? How did he first meet them?
They knew each other. They met someplace before. Maybe when they were hunting close to each other. Or maybe they saw them in some camp, you know. People from over there used to come over quite a bit to hunt and trap. To hunt mostly because there was no traps in the mirrors. And I guess they met up with them. In that way, these people from the Cuyahoga River, they used to go towards the coast over the Huxley River to hunt the same time. And that way they meet each other. And then they'd exchange grub. Like people from the coast, they'd bring over seal oil and blubber. They'd exchange that with some dry fish or meat. And they become acquainted that way. Yeah.
I'm curious about these villages, like Galena. Did Galena always used to be where Galena is?
Oh yes, the way it's got its name. Yeah. Of course, the base started up around in the in the summer of 1941. It was just a very small village. It was just like this, you know. There was nothing back there where the airfield is now. And then the way it got its name, Glina, there was a prospector there. Across, he used to haul mine Glina from across there, Glina ore. And he had a horse, and he used to haul it to right out to the river. He'd catch them there, and then later on the boats would come and pick them up. They'd ply up and down the Yukon. And he used to haul quite a bit of this Glina ore, and that's how Glina got its name, Glina. Of course, it started out pretty small. Of course, this village was here before Glina was established. The village of Glina was ever established. And like I say, in 1941, there was nothing there. It was a small village. So that's how the village got its name. Mm.
How about Bishop Rock? Did that used to be a village?
No, there was nothing there. There was a bishop that got killed there. I don't know what year, around 1890 somewhere. Even before that, I believe. He was coming in from Canada, and there was a fellow with him a companion along with him. And I guess they stopped there, right at Bishop Rock there. And they camped there for a while. They were going down the river. And this fellow, I guess he got out of his mind. And then he killed this bishop. And that's how the place got its name, Bishop Rock. The name of the bishop was Bishop Siggers. Of course, after he got killed, I guess they shipped his body back outside these other missionaries from Nulat or wherever. So that's how the place got its name, Bishop Rock.
Were there people living in it?
There was nobody there at that time, no.
Nobody there?
There were nobody there at that time.
Who were the first people to be
Bishop Rock? Well, I can't remember. There were so many people, different people, ahead of us. One of the most, Charlotte Evans from Glina, he used to fish there quite a bit. And people before him, well, it just came down through the years, you know. The place is mostly used for fishing. It's not too good for trapping because it's right in the middle of nowhere, I mean, out on the flats. And Bishop, that hill is just all by itself. And the place is just good for mostly fishing. So down through the years, a lot of people fished there before we did.
How would it be handed down? Would somebody say, invite you to stay there? Or?
Oh, they just moved there without inviting each other. You know, in the first place, it just belonged to nobody. The place belonged to nobody. Yes. A lot of people used to fish there, but then they'd move away, get tired of the place and move away, and then somebody else used to come there. There used to be a regular fish camp across there on the other side. And then people used to camp across there. You used to have the fish wheel on this side around the bluff. So, in the late 1890s, there used to be people, you know, the miners that come in from outside. They had nothing else to do. That only thing they turned to earn a few dollars was to cut wood for the steamers plying the Yukon up and down. And there used to be quite a bit of wood cutter in that area. Yeah, like that. And there used to be a mail cabin there too, below the regular camp, for the mail carriers to stop overnight. Yeah. So I guess that there were the people that used to use the place. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a cabin back in the lake where people used to trap. I myself was there one year. I mean, they used just for a visit. And the fellow, an old fellow by the name of Jack Monahan, he built that cabin. And he used to just a camp there. He didn't cook or anything. He just stayed out. And then later, when he left the place, and this other people moved there and used it as a trapping place. So those are the people that used the place also. And then in this later years, it was mostly used for, as a fish camp. So, like I said, that's how the place got its name, Bishop Rock.
Yesterday you talked a little bit about going to school, and I was wondering if you ever went to school in Holy Cross.
Oh, I didn't mention that. I was there for 5 years, yeah.
Holy Cross?
Yeah, yes. I went, my parents sent me down. There's two of us there, my younger brother. He was about 3 years older, younger than I was. And they sent us down in the summer of 1930. And then we stayed down there for 5 years. And then, they made arrangement with the missionaries down there that we were going to be there for 5 years. And then when the 5 years was up, they sent for us. Of course, the only way to travel in them years was by steamers. Well, of course, my younger brother, he passed away down there, so I came home alone. So I came back home in the year of 1935. Oh, he got sick somehow. I don't know. I don't really know what kind of sickness he got sick with. Anyway, he was sick for about a month and then he passed away. And then where they put you first is that when you start school, they put you in there. You don't start with a grade one or two. They start you off with a primer A or primer B. Well, I went through both of them, and then I went up to first, third, and second grade. And that's highest I went to is third grade. And then since that time I came home, I never went to school anymore. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember? How you felt when you were going down there, and how you got to school, and just the first impressions of school.
Oh well, there was over 200 kids down there, so to us, my father and mother used to talk about the place quite a bit. They were down there too, you know.
Oh, your father.
Oh yeah, my father and mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So was it just about you? What to expect? Well, of course, there was rules and regulations, and all kids were alike. There was no love, right? Too much for one kid or nothing. Of course, there were missionaries that had it like that. You know, they didn't favor nobody. Of course, I suppose it was good for us. Of course, when we get into mischief, they disciplined us quite a bit. And they spanked us. And
were you ever disciplined?
Oh yes, a lot of times. Yes. Yeah. Well, for answering back, and I still remember I got paddling in the mouth for answering back. It hurt so much. I still remember that. Oh yes. It wasn't like now. You know, they hardly lick any kids in school, and then. The other ways, there's a lot of other ways that you get punished, you know. Sometimes they make you miss a meal. Sometimes they make you go to bed early. And it was a regular boarding school.
What was it like, I know there are different schools where you weren't allowed to speak your own language. Did you know how to speak English when you went there?
Oh, very little. And then I completely forgot my language up here. When I came back here, I couldn't understand even my own father and mother in the 5 years I was down there. Well, of course, I spoke a little English before I went down, before we were sent down there. And of course, there were kids from all over the place, some from Fairbanks, some from way down the river, some from the Kuskokwim River, all over. So this from different places, they spoke among themselves, you know, like Eskimo and Native, just and language we use in the interior. Some of the kids that were sent there, when they first got sent there, they didn't know a word of English. But then after a while, they'd catch on. It was like any regular school. The schools would start 9 o'clock and then out maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But they sure make us learn. Oh yes, they make us learn. Mostly about Bible history. Since being missionaries being there, they talk mostly about Bible and the Lord. And then, they learned quite a bit. They see to it that the kids learned. And if they didn't learn, they got disciplined. Sometimes instead of being graduated, they put you back.
Was that hard if they put you back?
Well, that kids couldn't learn like they were like anybody else that couldn't learn. There were some kids that like that, and they were always year after year. Sometimes they were always in the same grade. You just couldn't learn anything. It was just natural, I guess. Oh, yeah.
Did you ever speak Athabaskan? Did you get to speak your own language after school or with other students?
Oh, when we first got there, me and my brother used to talk quite a bit, you know. But the missionaries didn't like that because they couldn't understand us. They might think we're talking about them.
But even after school, you couldn't talk your own language?
Oh, at any time. We did talk quite a bit. Use our language whenever we were alone, but then sometimes the missionaries didn't like that, you know. They make us speak English, so they'd understand what we were saying.
What would they do if they kept you speaking English?
They'd remind us not to use our language. We never got punished for that, though. We got punished for fighting, and for being lazy.
They make you work?
Yeah, oh yes. And for answering back to them. Oh, whatever mystery we get into. And sometimes we get spanking pretty hard for smoking. I used to get into that too. Oh yes.
Where'd you get your tobacco?
Oh well, maybe when we take a walk down the village, towards the village, we pick up butts here and there, and then in that way we obtain tobacco.
Oh, so
and sometimes the bigger boys, are allowed to smoke. They used to give us cigarettes. Oh yes, and that way we used to smoke. because we never used to smoke for long. Whenever we had a chance, we used to smoke, you know.
What kind of cigarettes were
those? Oh, a Camel, maybe Lucky Strike, or whatever they gave us, the bigger boys. Yeah, I remember we got caught, and we got pretty hard spanking for that, with the straps. What? Quarter of an inch thick. They make us put down our pants, and that really hurts.
Yeah,
leather strap. Oh yes.
That slowed down your smoking.
Oh well, we just had to behave ourselves after that. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, what was the village like? So you said you'd pick up butts and you'd walk to the village. When would you get to do that?
Whenever they make us. Whenever they took us for a walk down towards the. There used to be an airfield down there, and then they'd make us take us out for a walk that far and then back. And then whatever we see on the on the ground there, I suppose we picked them up. And in that we gathered some. But mostly this bigger boys, they used to give us cigarettes. If like you say, we give them some candy and they give us cigarettes. Well, it was pretty good trade, I suppose. And of course we got punished for it, wasn't it?
What people were living at Holy Cross?
Oh, it was just like here, families, different families, Dementives, the Andrews, Edwards. Of course, these old people, they all passed away now. So I wouldn't remember who's living, the Walkers. And some other people that I wouldn't remember.
Did you ever visit with those people, or did the school keep you away from the village?
Oh, well, mostly these people from the village, they came and visited us when they visited their kids. And sometimes every weekend, the kids right from Holy Cross, they visit their folks.
Well, even those kids had to stay in the school?
Yeah.
They didn't live at home?
They didn't live at home, yes. So every weekend, they were permitted to visit their folks. I visited our relatives one Christmas. Their name is Edwards, and then they gave us a pretty good meal, and they gave us some candies, and then we were sent back to the mission. Of course, that was around 1933.
Did you think about your family while you were at school? Did you miss home?
You mean our parents?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We get pretty lonely for home. All through the 5 years we were there. You know, no kids didn't like the place. Because there weren't too much rules and regulations and didn't like that.
Did you and your brother, you said your brother passed away.
Yeah.
So then?
He passed away around in March of 35. Just about 3 or 4 months before I went home.
Yeah. And you must really miss him.
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what did you think about when you were going to go home?
Well, I felt happy like anybody else.
What did you think you were going to do first thing? Did you have plans about what?
No, I was just 13 years old. And you know how a 13-year-old kid would feel. I had no plans. To just be glad to be getting home. And then, like I say, when I came back home, I couldn't understand our own native language. I just completely forgot. And then people were so different. They were not religious. And then they used to have a lot of fun down there. You know, you laugh at every little thing. And then people around like that weren't like that around here. And then, I got... Of course, I didn't know any better, you know. Sometimes I'd laugh at somebody. I couldn't help it because I was down there for 5 years. And then I suppose I learned that from down there. And when I came back up here, I started behaving the same way as when I was at the Holy Cross. And then I was criticized for that. And then as I grew older, I got out of it. Mm-hmm. That's one thing about it, you know, when you're at the mission ladder for so long, you just completely forget about your own home, just how they make their living and the language. Of course, when I came home, I just forgot how to hunt, you know. And of course, as simple as snaring rabbits, I didn't do too good, you know. My mother had to teach me that. And then you had to learn about this life all over again. Oh, yeah. Of course, some that were down there for 35 years, right in the mission, were orphans, you know. And the orphans that spent their time there and no place to go to, no folks to come back to, they just stayed in the mission, worked for the mission like cutting wood. What they did was mostly cutting wood for the mission. In that way, they stayed at the mission. This one fellow I know of, his name is Charlie Puslick. My mother knows him. They're about the same age. You know? And he's the one that spent his time there for 35 years. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had no home. And he got so used to the mission that he just stayed there.
How old was he when he left there?
Oh, I suppose he got to the mission when he was about 4 or 5 years old.
So he would have been about 40 when he finally left?
About, yes, about that time.
Where did he go then?
Well, when they'd done away with the place, I guess he stayed right at Holy Cross Village.
Oh.
Uh-huh. He didn't move away. Probably by now he passed away, I wouldn't know about, I wouldn't know. Last time I saw him, he was up this way, it was in 1948. When James Walker, they came up to Glenor to get a bunch of lumber, you know, the army buildings they tore down, and some others, machinery and little motors. These Walkers came up about 2-3 times, and then just to pick up something. And then he was with them, this Charlie Pustelnik. That's the last time I saw him. So I never did ask me if he was still living or not. Yeah. He used to have quite a bit of fun with the boys, you know. He was much older than the boys, and they used to all gang up on him and throw him in a wrestle. He used to be a lot of fun, that fellow there. And he used to put a lot of tricks on us, you know. And that way, everybody liked him. Like I said, whether or not he's still living or not, I wouldn't know.
When you came back up from Holy Cross, you came back up on a boat?
Yes, on the steamer Ninana. That's on the bank of Fairbanks now, as a museum. Yeah, like I came back on that.
And where did that let you off?
Right here in Kaikuk.
Right here mm-hmm. at the bank.
Yeah, of course there was no there was no bar across there at that time. It was just like all the way across was just a deep water. And then when the steamers used to come right straight across, they never used to go around the bar. And then from that time on, maybe around 1937, this bar actually started building up from what it is now.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember that ride on the steamer, what it was like?
Oh, yes.
Who was on the road?
Well, I remember the captain because he was an old timer. He used to pilot these boats long before I ever went down, and everybody used to know him. He used to come down, I'd see him once in a while. The purser, I'd know him.
What was the captain's name?
Captain Adams. Mm-hmm. Of course, everybody knew him. And this first mate, of course, everybody knew him also. Oh, he was pretty rough with the deckhands. And all his deckhands didn't like him very much because he was so rough with them. His name was Billy Hardnuts, this fellow, this first mate. Of course, yeah, everybody knew him. And this steamer ran up and down the river for about 25 years. No, about 20 years. And then around 1942, they laid him off. You know, he retired, along with Captain Adams, with the engineer and him. But they were so used to boats and work on boats that they got to work for a private company over at the Kuskokwim River. Of course, this Captain Adams, he was a pilot of this steamer. And this first mate, he was still the first mate. And this engineer, he was still the engineer. You know, they got so used to that life, they just couldn't leave it right away. And of course, a few years after that, they all retired and they passed away, I suppose. Because during the service, we were stationed there for 9 months at McGrath. It's right on the Kuskokwim. Mm-hmm. And the steamer Langley, he used to freight from the Bethel up all the way up to McGrath. And that's where we saw them again. Of course, not long after that, because they retired. This Captain Adams, he was pretty old himself. so were these other two.
Well, when that steamer line Indiana came over here to Kaiku, when it got in, what time of day was it?
Anytime. Anytime they got here.
How about that time that you came up from Holocaust?
Well, we left there about midnight, and then it took 2 nights for it to come up here, and then maybe it was a little around 3 o'clock that it landed here, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
So everybody came out to meet it?
Oh no, just my father came to meet me. Yeah.
Since you were 13 at the time you made that trip, you didn't do any work on the boat.
No. You were just a passenger.
So what did you do as a passenger? How'd you spend that 2 days?
I'll walk around the deck, go back at the stern and look at the stern wheel. And then sometimes we weren't allowed to go down on the first deck. Sometimes I sneak down there and take a look at the boilers.